present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a headline from the E! Online website read by Neil Sleet.
Cameron Diaz encourages women to keep their pubic hair in her new book.
Sam Hart for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Susan Kalman and Jeremy Hardy. And opposite them on my left, Paul Sinha and Hugo Rifkin. Susan, listen to this. Susan, who's uber keen on us staying?
Oh, yes, this was the visit from the effervescent bundle of joy that is Angela Merkel. She arrived today for one night only, much like...
Yesterday, or possibly
yesterday. She arrived.
The day before.
If you're listening to this on 4Extra, she arrived last year. Angela Merkel arrived for a visit to us all, to speak to the Houses of Parliament. She was here to meet the Queen. Apparently David Cameron was pulling out all the stops for her visit, which means when they had a cup of tea, as you know well in my house in the old days, if there was an important visitor, it was the Mint Viscount. That's where you got out, because they were on the biscuit tin on the top shelf and you weren't allowed a Mint Viscount unless someone important came.
But Susan, how often did visiting world leaders come to your house?
And the point was, he was looking for some reassurance from her, which he could feed to some of the Eurosceptics for the upcoming referendum, whenever that happens, on Europe. He said she was going to speak in German, but she spoke in English to them, and basically said some soothing things, but didn't really give him a huge amount of reassurance, I don't think, that he could take to his backbenchers and say, it's all going to be fine, we can get opt-outs and all of these things. So she was very impressive, though. I have a love of Angela Merkel.
I think she's fabulous.
I think she's amazing.
I do. I don't know if... has Cameron been really clear which powers he wants to reclaim for...
Invisibility.
That's what I would have thought. But I think Clegg's already got that.
She started in English, went into German, and then, a bit like Wizard of Oz, started in black and white, went into colour, went back to black and white. But she did a joke. She said something about, if you sing this, then you will be disappointed. On the other hand, if you sing the opposite, you will also be disappointed. Now, it lost something in translation. But in Germany, it's a very popular joke.
I want to know what a Mint Viscount is. I love hearing about white people's childhood. I have never heard of a Mint Viscount.
It's an aircraft from the Second World War.
It's the same. You had your Mint Viscount, you had your pink wafers. And...
Are these all euphemisms for nights out?
It's very difficult for me to look at you, Jeremy, because you've just spoken a German accent, and this is something I've never told you. Jeremy, the German accent is the one accent in the world I find incredibly sexy.
Oh, really?
You want to watch that one?
I find the authoritative way. You know, unlike British politicians, where they're all like, hey, it's okay, we're all in this together. Hey, it's no bother. Whereas she's just like, this is what happens! And you go, okay then, Angela.
I think it was just a turning of the roles, really. She's going to go back to Germany holding a white piece of paper, going, I have it in my hand.
It's nice that she went to the palace to give them news of the old country, though.
Yeah. It's also home of one of the few Greeks she doesn't have to give money to, so that's... during a visit to London, German Chancellor Angela Merkel has said she will work with Britain to reform Europe, saying she wants it to remain a strong voice inside the EU. Cameron has made it clear that he wants to curb freedom of movement, cut EU red tape, and stop the trend for hotels in Britain offering a continental breakfast. The pomp and circumstance contrast sharply with an Anglo-French summit last month when François Hollande and Cameron held a news conference in an aircraft hangar before sharing a pub lunch and a fight in the car park. 2 points to Susan. Jeremy, whose attempt at improving child welfare was pretty poor?
Oh, OK. Well, this is... the Cabinet are all at odds over child poverty and the way of tackling the issue of the poor in general. IDS is very worried about the poverty trap. Osborne thinks traps are quite effective. Cameron favours using the hounds because it gives them a sporting chance. But they're all at each other's throats. It's all about definition as to what is poor. And it's about the definition of whether you can use the term relative poverty. It's useful because inequality is debilitating for individuals and society. But past a certain point, relative poverty becomes irrelevant because, you know, compared to Osborne, Ian is utterly destitute.
So was Ian Duncan Smith's plan vetoed by George Osborne?
Well, it's all a bit messy. Then the money's not there. He wanted to change the definition of poverty to include all sorts of sort of moral things, like there not being a dad or there being drink involved. You know, because people think of it in purely economic terms, and it isn't necessarily, because there can be cultural poverty, because you could be like Cameron and go to a very expensive school. But on the other hand, if you go to a school where every kid has a family crest, you turn into a chinless pudding who hasn't got a clue about anything. and your worldview is very, very limited.
But that's the whole point, isn't it? There's no point labelling people at that age unless there's some point to the label. So I label kids as either terrifying or not terrifying. And it really is as simple as that, because I'm still at a stage where I take the bus and the kids on that bus that are terrifying shout really loudly and eat fried chicken and eat crisps, and the kids that aren't terrifying are not on that bus. It is... And you could say it's an economic thing, but on the way here at West Norwood Station, there were two posh kids shouting abuse out through the window at some poor kid, clearly a friend of theirs, on the platform, and they were just shouting abuse. It was as the train leaves, one of them shouted out, "Another thing, you shagged my mum," and then sat down in triumph, only for his friend to say, "I think you meant to say you shagged his mum." And it was a... a genuinely beautiful moment.
I've stopped. I can't get on the bus with school children anymore after a terrifying incident. It was in the winter and I was wearing my red duffel coat, which makes me look like Paddington Bear. And I was just minding my own business on the bus, and I got off the bus and I realised that they'd put chips in my hood. And when I put my hood up, I was covered in chips.
So what, now you wear the coat the other way round? And it becomes a handy nose bag.
One of the problems with the definition of poverty we have is at the moment you're considered to be a child in poverty if you have a family which earns, I think it's less than 60% of the national income. Now, one of the real problems with that is that, according to the statistics, since 2010, lots of families have come out of poverty because the national income has fallen and they've remained earning the same. So the obvious solution here is if they can manage, and they're going about it the right way, but if they can reduce the national income, average national income, to nothing at all, nobody will be poor.
What Brown used to do that was quite clever, he had this arbitrary point, and what he targeted all the money on the people who were just below that. So every year he could say, look at how many people I've lifted out of poverty. So all the people who were like £1 below that, he'd give a quid to.
What, personally?
Yeah, he used to drive around. He had a disguise, obviously. He used to dress up as a shepherdess.
The government has unveiled its new child poverty strategy, but plans to change the way poverty is measured have been put on hold after the coalition failed to agree on it. Under the current definition, a child is considered to be in poverty if it lives in a household where income is less than 60% of the national average and its games console is a PlayStation 3 or worse. Ian Duncan Smith called the definition too narrow, the first time in 20 years that a British child has been associated with a lack of width. It's rumoured that there are plans to reassess the number of people living in poverty in Somerset, now that so many families have their own indoor pools. 2 points to Jeremy. Paul, who assembled a cabinet north of the border this week?
There's been a clash of the titans. Not since Ali and Foreman in the 1970s has there been such a clash of the titans. North of the border, there have been two separate cabinet meetings. Number one, David Cameron and his cabinet met for the first time north of the border, and there was a big shock in Scotland, a lot of curiosity, because none of them had ever seen a Conservative MP before. And if you think that's unfair, it's actually true that there are twice as many giant pandas as there are Tory MPs. in Scotland. And 7 miles away, Alex Salmond and his cabinet decided to meet, and they sat there and discussed the big issues that at the moment are most important to the Scots. Did you see the curling? Yes, I saw the curling. It was amazing, wasn't it? It's like bowls, but on ice. That's what they were talking about for about 10 or 15 minutes, because they know that they just kind of need to keep their powder keg dry, because they know that the best chance of people voting yes is the more times that David Cameron appears as the face of the No campaign. Because there's nothing that the Scots love more than being told how to vote by a posh southern old Etonian. That is what thrills their blood, that does. So every time that David Cameron appears north of the border, it means that Scottish devolution becomes a more likely prospect. Do I agree? I don't know what to say, other than a massive tennis fan. And I've waited all my life for a British Wimbledon champion, and I'm not sure I want to lose him in a referendum. And if you think the future's not bleak when Andy Murray goes back to Scotland, let me tell you this. The number two ranked male tennis player is James Ward, and he's ranked between 100 and 200. And the number three and the number four are Jonathan Ross and Michael McIntyre. So, so that's purely selfish. As far as I'm concerned, the Scots can vote, and that's great. They should have their own say.
Yeah, and I tell you the other thing is that I like the proposed new flags. Have you been looking at these? People have been doing drawings of if Scotland goes independent. And there's one which I really like. It's a Pierce Ever doily in the middle of it. It's like the independent state of Mary Berry. It's the most.
But my favourite part of the story was David Cameron was interviewed, and I don't know if you recall, David Bowie made an emotional plea via Kate Moss for Scotland to stay with us. And David Cameron said when he heard that, he let out a cry of joy. And for many hours, I wondered what that cry of joy would sound like.
I think about what's Cameron's reaction going to be, because if Scotland goes independent, there's some fun, isn't there, in seeing him squirm in having to rename the big society the middle-sized society.
Well, the other thing that he did, which was brilliant, was he went to visit an oil rig and he got to try on another outfit. And the thing is, recently, Dave's been in all the disaster zones, and I think it's just the start of merchandising. I think soon you'll be able to buy a Dave Cameron doll. There'll be oil rig Dave and there'll be flooding Dave. There'll be bedroom tax Dave. It's not a popular one, that, clearly.
What are they going to do, Scotland? If they go independent and the oil runs out, they've only got enough money for about 30 years. They'll have to go, the whole economy will have to go back to relying on the crankies. I mean, what's going to.
They are. I do often think they are playing it very badly, Cameron and Osborne, because like one moment they're always like, sort of, you know, we value our Scottish brethren and cousins and we love you very much and we respect you as fellow Britons, but you're not taking the pound sterling. In fact, you're not even getting the city sterling. We're going to keep sterling and we're going to bulldoze it and we're going to put a Morris dancing museum there. And you won't be allowed to go there at all, but we respect you and love you and hope you stay.
I thought he looked quite sweet on an oil rig. He looked like he was vying to join the Village People tribute band. He did look awkward. He was probably trying to think of manly things to say about knowledgeable stuff about oil. So is this oil, is it extra virgin or is it sunflower?
On Monday, David Cameron took his whole cabinet to sit in Aberdeen, frightening the residents who'd only read about conservatives in fairy stories. By chance, the meeting was held shortly after Alex Salmond held a Scottish cabinet meeting a few miles away. There was no overlap between the meetings, despite worries that a dance-off might break out. The Scottish Parliament already controls its health, education, social work, housing, planning, tourism, economic development, law, home affairs, policing, environment, heritage, agriculture, forestry, fisheries, sports, arts and transport policies, leaving the British MPs in charge of philandering, expenses fiddling and appearing on jungle-based celebrity shows.
It's not really fair, is it? Because Wales just get to have their own disco once a month.
2 points to Paul. Hugo, who hasn't put a premium on patient confidentiality?
Right. This is this project, Care Data. Basically, it's this project that it's meant to take GP records and combine them with hospital records and turn them into a massive database for research and all that kind of thing. And it's been postponed because people are worried about it for confidentiality reasons. And it's difficult, this one, because I'm sort of in favour of it, because I think, you know, sharing data is a great sort of tool for research. It's fantastic. It's a slight problem that it's this government doing it, because people have got so used to thinking, you know, whenever Cameron's government so much as glance at the NHS, people assume they're being evil in some way. So you could have Cameron saying, you know, like, great news, we've found a load of money and we're going to give everyone on dialysis a new kidney. And most people would just be like, yeah, and which one of your Bullington chums is going to be selling you those then, you dirty Tory, you know? And so I think people are maybe a bit blinkered to what is essentially a good idea. However, there is a problem, and that it now turns out that when this project comes in, it's going to be done by Atos. And Atos, you know, and see, I'm worried about this not so much because Atos are evil, more that I have concerns about their methodology, because Atos have been very deft at sort of playing down disability statistics and pushing people back to work and that kind of thing. And I worry that this is going to mean that the records will come in from GPs and hospitals and it'll say, like, I don't know, there's 25,000 people in the Northeast with multiple sclerosis, for example, and you'll have the company in charge of them going, nah, they've just got colds, it's fine.
But they've already sold some of this information. This is the reason that everybody's anxious, because they've already sold some of this information.
This was before a change in the law, in fairness.
It went to the Institute and Faculty of Actuaries, apparently, this information. I did like this very much. The Institute and Faculty of Actuaries, which I've never heard of, on their website, they offered a full rebuttal. And I thought, well, I'm sorry, but free buttock implants are not going to modify.
Whether or not they've changed the law, they sold, I mean, it was 12 or 13 years of information about all of us for £2,000. And it is debatable whether or not they anonymised it, because they then sold it to the actuaries who put up everyone's premiums for critical health and things like that, because they had your postcodes, they had some of the dates of birth. I mean, I sometimes think that the people that make these decisions, they're putting Atos in charge of it, who, the pantomime noise from the audience says it all. Everyone's like, ooh.
I'd call this the thin edge of the wedge if I knew what that actually meant. But from my medical background, it was just taken for granted that there was automatic patient confidentiality, and the only circumstances in which doctors could release information about their patients if they were a little bit drunk at a dinner party. That was...
But we shouldn't be shocked by the NHS's lack of respect for our privacy, because, I mean, in retrospect, surely the gowns that leave our bottoms hanging out was a little bit of a clue. Days after the controversial care.data scheme to share GP data was postponed, it emerged that the medical records of every NHS hospital patient in the country have already been sold for insurance purposes. This isn't the first time data has been shared incorrectly. Last year, a data stick was accidentally left inside a transplant patient who was then left on a train. NHS has reassured patients that they cannot be identified, as it shared their date of birth and postcode, but not their name. Good news for most of us, bad news for the man who's so obese he has his own postcode. At the end of round one, the scores are Susan and Jeremy have got 4 points, but so too have Paul and Hugo. We start round two with a cutting from the Wired Gov website.
Over 80,000 Scots will receive a bowel cancer screening test through their letterbox.
And our thanks to Claire Hadley for sending us that. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, who might have to get out their credit card to get a visa?
It's the visa auction. Basically, the Home Office advisers have said, why not just sell off visas to the richest people in the world to make some extra cash? But if you are patriotic, then wouldn't you think that a British passport, a visa, is a somewhat precious thing rather than, you know, a load of Chinese and Russian sort of mafia plutocrats just bunging us money and we give them citizenship? But that's what's being suggested.
But the migration, I think they call the Migration Advisory Committee, proposes that about 100 premium investor visas should be auctioned off each year with a reserve price of £2.5 million. Now, can I just say, having been on eBay, just look out for how they sting you on the postage. That is...
The fact that it was described as a kind of visa eBay worried me a bit, because, I mean, eBay can go really badly wrong. You know, if other countries did this, you can imagine sort of getting home from the pub and being a bit bored and then waking up in the morning and you're Somali or from Belgium. Yeah.
Yeah, but I can see the temptation. I once bought a racehorse by mistake.
What did you think it was?
Well, it was a celebrity. Was that a race? What do they call them? Race meeting? I'm not really a horsey person.
I've been to one of those race meetings.
A race meeting. It was full of people who looked rather like their horses. And so they said to me, would you auction off this racehorse for charity? And so I thought, all right, OK, and it was a rather nice-looking creature. So I said, we could auction this horse off, and I'll start things going back. I'll say 1,000 guineas. Silence. Nothing. Not one... And I thought, what am I going to do? I've come in my sports car. I can't get this horse home. I don't know anything about it. For a brief while, I owned a racehorse.
I'm obviously grateful to immigration in the sense that if my parents hadn't come here, I'd have spent the last Olympics celebrating a bronze in the badminton. But it's a glorious, glorious bronze. But I mean, it's just brazen greed. And I prefer the system they had before, where you were allowed to be in this country not depending on how good you were at cricket. I think that was just a much better system.
Because basically people are paying money to skip a queue. And, I mean, should we be turning Ryanair ideas into government legislation? It just seems...
I thought the whole point was, you know, it's all about skills. We want the people here that we need. So the kind of people that they're talking about. So what special skills do you have? I murder my business rivals.
The government's official immigration advisers have defended proposals to auction off visas giving the right to settle in Britain to the highest bidder. Nick Rollison, the head of business immigration at the Kingsley Napley law firm, said it would cause an eBay culture, which is when your visa arrives, but it has been very poorly packaged and smells of cigarette smoke. Opponents of the plans worry that it sends the wrong message to the public, and there are also concerns that it could let Piers Morgan back in. Successful bidders would be required to donate at least £500,000 to good causes, a fund which will eventually build a sanctuary for Lib Dems after the next election. 2 points to Jeremy. Paul, whose house is no longer a home?
Quite a lot of people, it would seem. Would you believe it? Home ownership is decreasing and decreasing and decreasing, and it's at the lowest it has ever been for years. So there's a block of people who own their own homes, and they're over the age of about 35, 36, but under the age of about 70. People at the lower age range, the young people, and the older age range are just not buying property. And if there are any young people listening, and you never know, if there are any young people listening... Let me tell you now, buy your own property. It's amazing. I don't know why people wouldn't buy their own property. What you do is you take every piece of money you've ever earned in your entire life and you put it all into one project, which is a deposit for a house, and then you get a 25 to 30-year loan through a mysterious company full of people you've never met and don't trust at all, and you live your entire life knowing that if your circumstances change in any way whatsoever and you're unable to repay the loan, that's your life ruined and you're bankrupted forever. How any young people living today wouldn't buy into that concept is beyond me. It is surely the dream. My mum and dad's generation, and my mum, or specifically my mum and dad, say... Why didn't you save like we did when we were young? And it's like, but you didn't have anything to spend your money on when you were young. That's what's changed. Young people have dreams and ambitions to travel the world. Young people go on skiing holidays. My mum and dad never went on a skiing holiday. They couldn't. They lived in Calcutta. It was a ridiculous concept. So what I think is happening is the younger generation are taking the option of living a life and spending money on enjoyable pursuits while they've still got the dignity to look good whilst enjoying those pursuits.
But are you telling me that looking for tiles in top tiles isn't enjoyable?
Yes, I
am. Why do you think it's called top tiles? Because that is as good as tiles get, Paul.
So all these young people are renting. So just explain to me, does it count as renting if they're related to you and the only payment you receive is a mound of dirty washing?
I think Jeremy's absolutely right, though. I think that young people these days are obsessed with fun and enjoyment, and they should just sort out. I mean, I bought a flat when I was 20, and I couldn't go out for 10 years after that. And you know what? I got by. I mean, it was miserable, and I hated myself and the 6 people I had living in the flat to pay the mortgage. We had really... excellent times together in that one room. And I tell you, And I think they should stop saying, oh, but I can't buy these clothes and I can't do this and that, and just buy a house. Don't have any furniture in the house because you can't afford any furniture in that house, but you can lie on that floor and think, I don't own this.
What we need is vastly more social housing. The trouble is it's now been stigmatised and people think council houses equate with drug-taking and disaffected youth doing nothing and setting fire to bins, whereas it used to be council housing was for respect, what they now call hard-working people. The audience might be surprised to hear this, but when I was born, my family actually lived in a council house. It was once I'd been called Jeremy that we had to move. It was quite dramatic. It was like Gone with the Wind. But no, it's renting has become stigmatised. In many parts of Europe, people just rent. They don't aspire to own property. But the trouble is that property is taken over from the word home. Because as long as you had a home, you thought, oh, thank God, I've got somewhere to live. I won't get wet when it rains. But now the word property is taken over. It's all euphemism. It's the seizure of the language by Kirsty Allsop and estate agents.
When I bought my first flat, I actually bought it from Shaken Stevens.
Did you?
Previous owner. And every time I tell people that, they say, did it have a green door? And I say, no. And then they say, did you have time to fix the windows and the doors? And I say, no, and it was annoying because he left it in a bit of a state.
But, well, that'll be all the shaking.
Well, absolutely. I think he was just the landlord. I don't think he lived there. I wanted to put his curtains on eBay and say, Shaken Stevens curtains. Mm. But it did make me wonder about the things we leave in properties when we move on. And what it makes the next people sort of think of us. Like, in the house we live in now, they left behind an axe with all kinds of stuff on the blade.
Never mind about the curtains. Shaken Stevens' axe, that would have got money.
No, it wasn't his axe, it was the next guy.
You could have just said it was his axe.
Yeah.
You're terribly.
I sell loads of stuff saying it's Sandy's. I loved Shaken Stevens. I had his album and I used to listen to it all the time. And I used
Do you want
to dress.
His curtains?
The English Housing Survey has revealed that home ownership has fallen to its lowest level since 1987. Now only 65% of us live in our own homes, with 18% living in privately rented accommodation, meaning almost a fifth of the population have learnt how to hide blue tack marks with Tippex. 2 points to Paul. Susan, which sport is a bridge too far?
This is about the immensely popular game bridge, which I know we're all avid players, and I am actually. I do know how to play bridge. And the English Bridge Union went to a judge because they wanted bridge to be a sport, not a game, because then they got VAT exemption.
It's actually the tax chamber of the first tier tribunal, which is also a lost title from the Harry Potter series.
And it was decided against the English Bridge Union because apparently, in order to be a sport, you have to have some form of physical activity. And it was suggested, I think quite wrongly, that bridge requires no physical activity, which says they've not been round my house to play strip bridge, which is a very popular evening pastime around my way. When you choose your rubber. So the thing was, so it's a game, not a sport. Now, the odd thing is that things that have been categorised as sports include things like darts is a sport, yeah, and billiards and croquet. Now, I haven't watched a lot of croquet. They don't have a lot of it in Glasgow.
Don't have that much grass.
So I haven't watched a lot of croquet, but it doesn't seem to me that like they sprint around when you're playing. It seems to be quite a sedate game where you stand on top of a ball and you hit the ball somewhere else and it goes on for hours and nobody wins, really. But that's a sport. But bridge isn't a sport because there's no physical activity.
Did you mention darts? I mean, to be fair, the players do sweat, but I don't think that stops when the darts ends. Do you know what I mean? I think that's...
Darts is good, though, because I like sports that enable you to be old, fat, drunk and uncoordinated, and it's basic. Darts and rugby.
Yeah. Are,
and jousting.
But bridge was an exhibition sport at the 2002 Winter Olympics. They actually had it as an exhibition sport, and I thought, I'd love that. They had to play it while on a luge.
I saw this story in the paper, and I thought it might come up. So this afternoon, I actually sat down in front of my computer and sort of looked up the rules of bridge to see what happened. And then I woke up and it was time to come here. It reminds me, though, of it was a few years ago when a Jaffa cake was declared to be a biscuit or not a biscuit, or whichever way around it was. And there's some kind of crisp that isn't a crisp, but is actually a cake. And it's all very confusing.
I blame the EU.
That's probably, yeah.
But pistol shooting's in the Olympics, and that all they... Yeah, that's not even exciting shooting. You'd have to drive past and shoot at somebody who's running away or anything like that.
Well, lots of sports aren't exciting. I can't stand Formula One. You don't even get to see the sports within Formula One. It's one step above robot wars, as far as I'm concerned.
Bridge requires, you know, what you could do is you could clench while you were doing it. Work your pelvic floor muscles. And then maybe, is that enough physical activity?
And most people playing bridge do have to get up to go to the lavatory quite often. Yeah. Because they can't clench their pelvic muscles any longer. But Twister's very... That's not a sport. And that's
Twister?
That's a lot of physical activity in Twister.
Physical.
You've got to get undressed. You've got to get vegetable oil all over yourself. You've got to trick your neighbours into coming round. You've got to get them a bit drunk.
You've got to put a lot of black bags down. So you're... Well, the thing is, the mistake people make when playing Twister like that, Jeremy, as you and I know to our cost, is you put the mat down, you get oiled up, and then you have to get off the mat, and your carpet, you're like, I can't get on the... And you're like, get your slippers, Susan. And I say, and I'm like, Jeremy, I left them in the kitchen. And you're like, you did this the last time. And I'm like, I'm sorry, Jeremy, it's just I got excited.
Oh, you have to tell them everything about us, don't you?
And in a caravan, that was so difficult.
I'm still worried. Oil?
Not flammable oil, I hope. Oh,
well, baby oil's better, but Jeremy likes the smell of vegetable oil because it reminds him of a chippy.
A tax tribunal has ruled that the card game bridge is a game and not a sport. Bridge is a card game that requires a partner to play with so that one can keep the other awake. It's the Jaffa cake all over again, isn't it, argued the Today Show, referring to the hearing which also ruled Jaffa cakes are not a sport. However, the tribunal rejected the claim that the game was a sport, concluding that contract bridge does not involve a significant amount of physical activity. Well, there goes my Bridger-size fitness DVD. 2 points to Susan. At the end of round two, the scores are Susan and Jeremy have got 8 points, but so too have Paul and Hugo. We start round three with an item overheard on The World at One.
Italian Prime Minister Enrico Letta has submitted his resignation. Letta had been in the post for 9 months.
That's so silly. Thanks to Rob Barrett for sending us that. Jeremy, who isn't taking their lack of hair on the chin?
Oh, you can get a beard transplant if you want to. Some people can't grow a beard. David Cameron famously can't grow a beard for some reason. But I can grow a beard except at the side bits. It goes quite well in the goatee sort of area, by which I mean the area that makes you have a goatee beard, not the part of you that resembles a goat. But around my cheeks, it doesn't grow properly. So you can either shave it and do that rather sinister sort of kind of Noel Edmonds creepy sort of... And I think, what's the point in doing that? If you're going to have a beard, go the full Dubliners. That's what I say. Don't have a beard where you shave bits into... Because that's just work. Surely the whole point of having a beard is that you no longer have to shave or wash your face or use dental floss. You know. You don't get food on your clothes because it's all in your beard for later. But if you're unhappy with the amount of beard that you can grow, you can get implants. You can get, like, you can have a kidney there, for example. You could have a breast on your cheek, which could be quite fun if, you know, sit with your head in your hands and think, oh, this is quite... I could get used to this, you know.
Does this mean there are people out there donating beards?
Yeah, you have a beard donor card, you fall off your motorbike. It's packed in ice very, very quickly.
There's different ways of doing it. So some bald men are having follicles taken from their chest, you see. But if you get a cheap surgeon, I think you get a nipple on your head. I think it's... And then some men have... this is weird, have hair follicles removed from the top of their head to their beard. I don't know why they just turn their faces upside down. Different places you can take it from. In fact, I'm thinking of shaving my legs soon, if anybody wants to bid.
The weirdest thing is why this is happening.
It's popular. They're in.
Hipsters wear beards. Yeah. And so because hipsters wear beards, people want to have a beard. And I'm reading this story going, I have no idea what a hipster is. Am I totally out of touch? Who are hipsters?
Those people that... Well, they started in Brooklyn, then they went to Shoreditch. Now they're even in Streatham. I saw one in Streatham. He looked a bit scared. He had it in a, they wear skinny jeans, have beard, they have D.H. Lawrence haircuts and sort of look of irony on their face. Everything they do is ironic.
It's the worst excuse I've ever seen to seek medical treatment. Do we want to look like a hipster? I am a hypocrite. I had a beard for 3 years in 1994, 1997. Her name was Fiona. She was very nice and bought me some time with my folks, which is very nice.
The thing is, it said that it's usually artists and architects who do this because it fits in with their professional hipster life. But the most popular looks, because you can get a look, you don't just get a beard, you can say, I want a beard like the following... So I could go in and say, I want Hugo's beard. And they would go, you don't need a transplant. And I'd go, that's quite rude. But the most popular is Brad Pitt, understandable. He's a handsome fella, never met him, looks quite nice on the television. The Brad Pitt or the Tom Selleck? Now, would anyone here... I mean, Magnum was popular at the time. It's a very quality television show.
I like the dark chocolate one.
I'm just sat here, Sandy.
I don't know... But when I think hipster, I don't think Tom Selleck, because he used to wear tight shorts and a Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah, but if I could have anybody's facial hair, I'd have Alistair Darling's eyebrows. Do you know? It's like all the colour from his body has just settled in one place, isn't it? Do you not get the sense if you shook him, he'd be light brown all over?
Hugo looks quite good, because Hugo... How old are you? Tell the audience how young you are, Hugo.
I think I'm 36.
36. Ooh, wow. Oh. Now, you see, Hugo looks quite cute with his slightly scrubby beard. It looks like, I'm just so busy and active. I didn't have time to shave this week, and this is what's happened. When you get to my age, you look like Santa or someone who's wise if you have a beard, because you can't look cool. I'm sort of George Clooney's age. I think I'll let my beard grow for a bit. Will I look like George Clooney? More like George Bernard Shaw.
Plastic surgeons in New York have reported a surge in the number of men requesting beard transplants. Popular requests include the Tom Selleck moustache and the Brad Pitt scruff. Unpopular requests include the Liam Gallagher monobrow and the Brian Blessed gorse bush. Hugo, who's rudely pushed property prices into a cul-de-sac?
Oh, everybody. Yeah. This is a survey of some sort which has shown that houses on streets with rude names are... people are prepared to pay far less for them. Mm. I think this is a bit strange. I think lots of people would actually be prepared to pay more to live on a rudely named street, but apparently that's not the case.
You can pick up a 5-bedroom house on Big Sweaty Donkey Bollocks Avenue for 20 grand.
We have solved the problem of young people getting on the property ladder. Yeah. Oh, we've definitely solved the problem of young people getting on the property ladder now. Did they just offer property at reduced prices?
We were having a look at this. Crotch Crescent. Well, I bet the topiary there is very neatly trimmed. This is a true place. There's a place in Donegal called Muff with a thriving diving community.
There's a place just outside Edinburgh, where I'm from, called Bigger. And there's a famous story, I can't remember who it is, some Victorian politician who his secretary was addressing letters, and they came back for him to sort of sign, and he saw that instead of Bigger, his secretary had written Bugger. And so he wrote a little note on it and said, make Bugger bigger. And so it came back to him, and in capitals he'd scrawled Bugger.
You would have. It's back to that thing of trying to explain if people are sniggering at you. And I think it's just a case you would just have to man or woman up about it and say, I live in Fanny Hands Lane.
Well,
what's
the people in
problem?
Fanny Hands, the people in Fanny Hands Lane, which is in Ludford in Lincolnshire, refuse to change their name, saying in America it just means bum anyway. And you think, yeah, wouldn't want to live somewhere called Bum Hands?
I bet posh people call it sort of Faha Lane.
Cocker Dobby was ranked 10th rudest. Team one of Andy Pandy's friends. Anyway, a statistician working for a property website... Wow, all his dreams coming true all at once. A statistician working for a property website has found that a house on a street with a rude-sounding name can be worth up to £84,000 less than a similar property nearby. The price drops by a further £20,000 if you live at number 69. Living in a house on a rude-sounding street can lower the price of your home almost as much as living next door to Nigel Farage. Streets with rude-sounding names like Crotch Crescent, Bell End and The Knob are both funny places to live and the new presenter lineup for the next series of Top Gear. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Ms. Kelman.
This has been sent in by Ray Rumsby from Norfolk. We organised a pancake race every year for about 5 years, said Mrs. Wiles. Now it's about trying to stimulate a sense of community by having some fun. We're looking for people who can toss and run fast at the same time.
Mr. Hardy.
This is Paul Turner, who lives in Back Passage in Stow-on-the-Wall. And it's a sign from outside a Lloyds Bank. Due to flooding and electrical issues, unfortunately, the branch has had to close. Nearest branches are Boughton-on-the-Water and Moreton-in-Marsh.
Mr. Sinha.
This has been emailed by Keith Emerson, and he's spotted a poster for the ultimate culinary event. It is a feminist bake sale for equality. 75 cents for women, $1 for men.
Mr. Rifkin.
This has been emailed in by Dave Brockman, and it's from the Daily Telegraph, and it's a headline, and it just says, Joan Collins is still having sex at 80, and she's not alone.
Let's take a look at the final score. Paul and Hugo have got 12 points, but this week's winners by a narrow margin are Susan and Jeremy with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Wolverhampton Chronicle sent in by Judy Bell.
A naked man brought a Keep Fit class to a standstill when he burst in and began performing obscene acts to music in front of 60 shocked women. Police were unable to get a description of the man, as few had been looking at his face.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news bits were Susan Kalman, Jeremy Hardy, Paul Sinha and Hugo Rifkin. In the chair is Sandy Toksvig and the news is read by me, Neil Sweet. The show's script was written by Roderick Crooks, Benjamin Partridge and Lucy Clark, with additional material by Miranda Walker, James Bugg and Gronya Maguire. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.